and welcome to another episode of Building Minnesota Rocker. Today, we have another guest. That's 2 weeks in a row, Brett. We're killing it. We have on Benson, a.k.a. Benson.
Nice.
The well-known caster, host, internet personality, awesome guy. It's great to have you on, so thanks, Benson, for making time for us. It's great to see you again.
Thank you for having me on. I'm excited. I love you guys. I'm ready to talk all things. I know you said it lasts like between 30, 45, maybe an hour. We're going to go 2 hours today. We're just going to talk all day. It's going to be a great time.
All right. I'm going to cancel all my meetings. And if you're listening, I hope you just got excited and not filled with a feeling of dread. I hope
we're clear the afternoon.
Yes, clear the afternoon.
All meetings canceled.
Exactly.
This goes all day.
Hey, I'd be down.
Quarantine. You got nothing else to do, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be inside anyway.
Exactly. I'm going to be inside. And then, I mean, also, obviously, me, Ashley, a.k.a. Midnight Director Content here. And then Brett Diamond, the COO, coming at you. I'm loving that we started the podcast up again, Brad. I know we took a small little break there when the whole world went into a different universe, it feels like. So we haven't been doing it as much. But, you know, last week we had Hector on. I think we came back for a return episode before that. It feels good to be back and just talking and getting that, like, FaceTime. I think it's really awesome to connect with people that way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's great just to talk about what we're doing, right? There's, you know, it's obviously a different world that everybody's living in, but, you know, we'll share with the listeners and the fans what's going on with Rocker, and it's great to have some guests on and hear different perspectives on what's going on in the scene.
Yeah, it's super awesome. And I think, like, Benson, you particularly, so for those of you guys that don't know, well, hopefully you do, because hopefully you've been watching the amazing CDL matches, specifically our matches this year. Benson has casted quite a few of them, and you've been casting since, we were just talking about this before the podcast, but it was like 2011, 2012. I'm trying to think of, like, when you first popped on my radar. And you started in Call of Duty, right? Is that that's how I knew about you so early on then, because I was obviously super deeply ingrained in Call of Duty. And then, I mean, you've casted a bunch of other games. I think you casted Halo as well, came back to Call of Duty, and now you're on with the CDL, which made me super stoked when you were, you know, I think it was like Black Ops 3 was the year they changed up a lot with the casting, but now they came back to their roots. They knew better. It was awesome. So from your POV, how's this year been going so far? I mean, we've obviously been in Call of Duty for a long time. All right. So we know the deal. We know the competitive COD cycle every year. And now it's been, like, elevated because it's a part of this bigger league. The teams, the franchises have all bought in, and we're all in it together. What's your perspective, or what's been, like, the biggest difference for you in the way that this has been run?
It's hard, right? Because gameplay wise, it feels like it's just any other year, right? Because we're seeing the same kind of structure, if you will, that we have in the past.
Yep.
I think the big thing for me, and don't blush because this is a compliment towards Rocker, is the system which was designed works. And you guys, to me, are the team that are proving it works the best. There's a lot of teams, I think, who have invested into this infrastructure who maybe aren't doing as much as they could, which kind of frustrates me a little bit. But then I see, like, you guys with your watch parties. Obviously, I know quarantine happens and you can't do those, but you still do them on Discord, which is fantastic. It's just showing that the system works, right? Which to me is fantastic. Like, the opening launch weekend, that was amazing for me.
Yeah.
Seeing, like, your team specifically, and it's no, like, shade towards those players, but historically, like, they're not massive fan favorites. And to hear the crowd, like, erupt in Minnesota was amazing. It, like, sent, like, shivers, like, down my spine. It was like, oh, wow, this is sick. And every city we've gone to, we've seen that kind of work. Obviously, it sucks with the league having to move to an online format, but that's completely out of our hands. But it does give me this kind of, I don't know, like, happiness almost that, hold on a minute, like, we didn't just do this just because every other league is doing this. We're doing this on this specific model because potentially it can grow into something special and something great, which for fans, I think, is amazing, right? Because even now I'll have, like, people occasionally tweet at me like, oh, you know, I'm from Florida. Who should I support? You know, my favorite player is this, my favorite player is that. And I always respond with, support your home team, right? start there. And then maybe if you get a favorite player, move on to X, Y, and Z, because I think you guys will know as well as anyone else, sports, you don't necessarily always support your home team in sports, right? Sometimes you can move a little bit further away if you want. But for me, like I said, I think the system actually works, and you guys are doing a fantastic job of showing that it does just that.
Yeah, I remember. Go ahead, Brett.
No, I was gonna say thank you. You know, it's something where it that means a lot to us, coming from people that have been in the scene for a long time, because coming into it, we were and we still are the newest organization, the newest group. I mean, obviously all the orgs are new in a new league, but coming into it, we were the only team that didn't have, you know, 10 of the 12 teams are an OWL. Sure. The London team has a history in the space. So for us, it was really important to make sure that we were hiring the right people. Obviously started with Ashley, and listening to people who've been in the scene for a long time and taking the right steps while also adding our own, you know, our own flair to it and doing things that we felt like could add and build on what was already great about it.
Sure.
You're absolutely right. Those moments, we talked so much as a staff and as a team about how much we were looking forward to that moment launch weekend when our team would be announced for the first time.
So sick.
The walkout.
And, you know, we always expected it to be an amazing feeling, but it just exceeded all expectations. And then when they started chanting, "Let's go Rocker," we all kind of looked at each other like, wow, this is real. Awesome. This isn't just something we're planning towards or imagining. Like this is real. And it's been a wild ride for sure.
I think when we talked about it, Ben, at the event, I think after I came up to you and you were like, dude, this is like the first event, and I mean, we really were like the new kids on the block. And so for us to come in, host the first event and have an immediate fan base just latch on just because of the geographic location, that was like, because coming from where we came from and like how Call of Duty Esports ran before, there was like two, maybe three sometimes, like juggernaut teams in this space. And
it didn't even matter if they were winning or not, right? They were just still the juggernaut team.
Like, yeah, exactly. Crazy. And I love our guys, and I knew this when we, you know, recruited them, but they don't have the biggest following. So it wasn't like a day one, like, okay, we're going to get X player and they're going to bring over their fan base.
Right.
We truly started, you know, from the ground, and we built this up. And so we would talk about it, like, yeah, I can't wait to see like our team take the stage for the first time. I didn't even know, like, I couldn't even imagine what that would look like, because I'm like, what is that going to be like? Like, I know we're making content. I know we're doing a good job, you know, promoting that this event is here and the league is starting here, so it's exciting. But I didn't know truly what it was going to look and feel like. And this is so nerdy, but I still get goosebumps, like, when I hear you guys, like, referencing it. I'm like, because I remember, like, looking down at the crowd, because we were on the side seating, and I see our players walking out, they're hyped, the crowd's hyped, and then people are getting into it. And it was a moment for me where I realized that this is like the start of something great. And even then I realized that, but now even like, you know, 6 months removed, looking back at it, it's like, whew, holy cow, like it happened. That is such a crazy thing that we were all working towards. And I think, you know, for the structure of what the league is and what they're trying to do, I think it's a promising start. Obviously, with everything moving to online, what can you do? I mean, you gotta roll with the
punches.
There's
not much you can do about that. I kind of feel like maybe you guys coming in as, quote, the newer kind of team, if you will, I think that probably helped you a lot, because what I found a lot is when teams come in who have, you know, teams in different esports, they have this, quote, vision of what is the correct way to do esports. And there is no correct way, right? Everyone has their own take and spin on things, but people get this formula in their head and they go, all right, well, it worked for this team. Therefore, we have to do it this way. And it basically all becomes the same. It becomes kind of very vanilla, if you will. So maybe you guys having so much of a fresh outlook on, hey, you know, maybe we could do this. Maybe we could do that. Let's try this. Let's try that. That probably helped you the most. Like, actually thinking about it, coming in as the completely new team, obviously hiring the fantastic people, the right people, helps a ton. But you know what? That probably has something there. There's something there to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. And it, we've talked about similar things, and even internally going back to the early days, where, you know, for us coming into the scene, whether it was myself personally or our ownership group, you know, came from the NFL world, but we weren't coming into it with an attitude that we had all the answers for esports, right? We sort of took the opposite view of, we have a lot to learn. We need to make sure that we're listening first and just absorbing it. But then our philosophy from a hiring standpoint was hire people that have, you know, that have experience and are coming from the scene. Case in point, Ashley, hire people from out from different perspectives entirely. So Annie Riley, our VP of marketing and creative, she worked at Aveda, which is a beauty brand.
Oh, wow.
So something very different, but had a lot of experience in social and digital media agencies, had worked around the content space her entire career, and also is a gamer herself. So she's been a lifelong gamer, but has never worked in the esports scene. So she has a unique ability to have kind of an insider's and an outsider's perspective at the same time.
That's awesome.
And so the first three hires, Ashley, Annie, myself, we sort of had these three perspectives, right? Coming from the esports scene, coming from traditional sports, coming from outside. And then every step along the way, we've continued that, right? Where we've tried to bring those perspectives together. And our philosophy is, everybody checks their ego at the door. There is no right answer. And everybody's ideas are, you know, get listened to, and
that's awesome.
Try to come up with, you know, there's not the right way or the wrong way. There's, you know, just sort of, we're figuring out what our way is. Some stuff works, some stuff doesn't. Do more of the stuff that works.
There you go.
Do less of the stuff that doesn't, right? Not rocket science.
But number one is to just do. And that's kind of where, like, you get the like Gary V, you know, he's minority owner here. So you get that little spin on it too. And it's like, heck yeah, like full momentum. And so, you know, that's why it's been weird for me, because obviously, you know me from before. I was for 10 years a part of the same team. I never really like changed my MO. I was consistent in the content I did. I was consistent in the teams and brands that I was a part of. So to switch now and be a part of something completely new, it's been super refreshing. For you, Ben, when you're coming into, do you have this, like that you said, the gameplay is like pretty much the same, but there's this new kind of vibe, obviously, with the league, a little bit of a different structure. How do you feel about what this transition means, not only for the CDL, but just for esports as a whole? Do you think that other esports are going to continue to go down this franchise model lane, or do you think every esport should, you know, case by case, see what works for them? What are your thoughts on this, like, kind of new age that we're entering?
So it's interesting, right? Because the number one kind of mantra almost from esports is, we have to compete with sports. Mm-hmm. That's been like the age old, like since I first started commentary and since I first got to, you know, talking with productions, like, we have to compete with sports. We have to compete with sports. Whereas in reality, I don't think we necessarily have to, right? It's two very, very different things. They live on completely different platforms. I mean, you know, the internet and TV, very different. Yes, of course, now you can start watching traditional sports on internet and stuff, but still, for the most part, they live on different platforms, so they're very different. So do you need a franchise league to succeed? I think it's case by case. I really do. I think for Call of Duty specifically, it works, and it works wonders. And there's other games and esports out there where it works, and it works wonders. But, you know, there might be games out there that maybe they're just not ready yet, right? I mean, think about Call of Duty. It's been, what, 13 years almost, really, since competitive Call of Duty really, really started to take off.
And it's such a massive franchise too. Like the competitive community is big, but the general, like, player base is massive.
It's ridiculous how many people play. I know they tweeted out the Warzone stats. I think it was like 2-3 days ago. It's like, the amount of people playing Call of Duty is insane. And it took us, you know, X amount of time to get to franchise league. And I think credit to the people at the top making that decision, because you could have jumped the gun, like, could have maybe gone too soon, and maybe it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
They did it at the right time, in my opinion. Obviously, we say right time. Looking back, we may say, that pesky COVID, man, it ruined launch here. But that's completely out of their hands.
Yeah, there's
out of everyone's hands.
There's no way that you could know that.
For the most part, I think it is dependent on game. I really do.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think you hit the nail on the head with the huge player base that Call of Duty has. And now, like, yeah, the free-to-play Warzone thing, that people, I don't think, have talked about that enough. This is the first free-to-play game from Call of Duty, with the exception of COD Mobile, right? I think,
and it has cross-play, too. and it has cross play too.
Dude, last night I was playing on PS4 with Brett, who had PS4. We were playing with some coworkers of ours. So Raul was on PC, and Annie, who he just mentioned, who, by the way, saved my life in Warzone. It was insane. Like, she clutched up, but she was on Xbox. So we're playing this free-to-play game.
So sick.
We're all playing together, and obviously Warzone is not, you know, super, super closely compared to competitive Call of Duty. They're kind of like two different beasts hanging out in the same house. But it's that intro, right? It's that, you know, Warzone's cool, but, oh, man, I kind of miss playing multiplayer in games like this. Let me go sign up on there. And then maybe they happen to stumble upon something in-game. Maybe they see, like, somebody rocking a rocker skin, and they're like, what's that? Who are those dudes? And then they look it up, and they're like, oh, wow, there's this whole world here. Like, there's still a whole world of Call of Duty esports for people to discover, and I think that's one of the things that makes me most excited.
So I've said this for the longest period of time, right? When we look at the Call of Duty esports ecosystem, a lot of people come in who may be like completely new, like producers, it doesn't matter who, but even fans, and they say, all right, so how do we grow this thing? Right? How do we grow Call of Duty esports to the next level? And then you start looking at all the other esports, right? And they say, well, they have this average concurrent, they have this, why? And then they start thinking, all right, well, how do we take those viewers and bring them to us? In reality, that's not the solution. The solution for Call of Duty is, how do we take the millions, and I mean millions of people that play the game every single day and have no clue we exist, which is so bizarre to me. I'm so ingrained into this. To me, that's such an alien concept, right? That someone could play Call of Duty every day and not know we exist.
Yes, like how do you not know who Scump is? How do you not know?
How do you not know anything about, like, you see the skins? How do you not know? But they don't, right? To them, it's just that guy's running around with a cool looking, like, Viking-ish skin, right? It's all that guy cares about. He's gonna go on. He's gonna keep playing his pubs. He isn't gonna inspect it. But for me, the answer to growing Call of Duty is, how do you get those people, right, who play your game? Forget the people that don't play the game. Like, that will come in time. That's always been my mentality. That'll come in time. As the esport grows, those people will come. But the people that are playing COD Mobile, how do we get them? Like, just the COD fans, there's so many of them, man. Like, I was saying, how sick would it be, right? Imagine it's Saturday, Sunday, Friday of a CDL weekend. Doesn't matter which day, right? You're playing Warzone. You're dropping in Warzone, and stadium roof turns into like a stream of the CDL.
Dude, so
you're dropping
shut
in
up.
And you're seeing, that'd like, you're seeing the game because the stadium makes sense, right? And for every weekend, you put banners of the players that are competing on that weekend around the stadium. You actually put the advertising of the weekend. So, you know, it's launch weekend. It's Minnesota Rocker. Like, that's the branding around stadium. But incorporate that into something that then how do you miss that, right? Okay, you miss the guy with the skin, sure, but you miss a stream on stadium when you're dropping in on Warzone? Nah, no one misses that. But it's just all these ideas that I think we could use and implement to get the actual players, people that love our game the most, that play every single day. Let's bring them. Let's make them fans of our esport.
Yeah, I think that's one way to do it.
First of all, I love that stadium idea.
Sick, right?
But you're absolutely right. That reaching that group is something that we talk a lot about in our marketing meetings and when we're thinking about how we grow the fan base, right? And I think our team, not just to date, but over time, will be an interesting test case for that, because we are in a market that had not hosted a major esports event and certainly not a CWL event previously. So it's even more important for us as an organization to reach those fans. I mean, I totally agree with you. The long-term success of every team in this league and the league as a whole will be on reaching that group that you just described 100%. And for us, you know, for us as a new team in the short term, we have to find a way to bring those to make them aware of this product and this team and hopefully do things and produce content in a way that brings them in. And it's interesting. We've started to see some of that. And even at our watch parties and some of the events that we've done, where we'll be talking with somebody, and, you know, usually we'll try to, and I haven't been at the watch parties cause I was at the actual events, but even when we've talked to fans, you know, at other various smaller events that we've been at around town, a lot of times we'll ask, how did you hear about us? Where did, you know, how did we get what brought you to Rocker to begin with? We've started hearing from a decent number of people that fall into that category where they've played Call of Duty for years. They're incredibly passionate about the game itself. And now that there's a competitive Call of Duty team, in their hometown
in their area
they live, it's getting their attention, and now they're, you know, now they're consuming the content and they're start, you know, they're starting down that funnel with us.
Yeah.
And then it's up, you know, once you get their attention as a team, now it's up, now it's on us to produce good content,
right,
to, you know, to have the players accessible, to have the organization accessible in a way that that they want to rally around the team. And, you know, long term, that's really what a big part of this will be for us.
Yeah, that's a great point, because yeah, talking to so many people, it's crazy when you're thinking like, yeah, I want to like reach these people, I hope we do, but then when you hear the firsthand, like face to face, like, oh, how'd you hear about us? And he's like, oh, well, I've played Call of Duty forever, but then I heard we had a team, and so I watched that, and then, now I'm here at the watch party talking to you, like
that's awesome.
Yes, I've literally had that interaction, and it's so crazy. And what's crazy to me too, and this is what really gave me a lot of motivation, not that I don't already have some, but this really kicked it up. So at the last LAN event that we were able to have in LA back in whenever it was before craziness hit, we were playing, I wasn't at the event obviously, but Brett was, and I was at our watch party. Brett was relaying that there were Let's Go Rocker chants during a Rocker match in LA. And if you would have told me that my team was being chanted for instead of a team with Crim6 and Clayster on it,
nuts, right?
I wouldn't have believed you. I would have been like, no way, dude. Those are powerhouses. But for some reason, sick. Like we were, I guess, the underdogs in the situation, maybe. I'm not sure, but they just rallied.
I think it's more than that. I really do. I think it's just the brand. Like the brand you guys have is, it's like refreshing in that sense. Like, again, like I just think you're doing all the right things. Like with the watch parties, for example, like if you have no fandom, right, you're not specifically any team, you're going to go to the team which A, excites you the most with the content they're putting out, B, the players are accessible, right? You know that you can pop into their stream and they're going to say hi, they're going to say what's up, you can get to know the players on a personal level, and just something that makes you feel a part of a family. That's like, for me, the three things a new fan is always going to look for, and I think you guys probably check off those three a lot better than some of the other teams in the league do. So for me, like when you hear those like Let's Go Rocker chants in LA, like it's weird because it almost went from, like I said earlier, the team which I didn't really think was going to have that much fan support is actually turning out to be the team which may actually have the most diverse fan support across the US. Like it wouldn't surprise me if we went to maybe like Paris or London next year and there's like Let's Go Rocker chants. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise, go international, like why not? But I think you guys are just doing so many things right that I think the fans for you guys are coming so organically and just naturally. And that must be the best feeling. I can't imagine for you guys how that feels, because again, it's the same way I kind of look at the league now. It's like, yes, it works. And you guys are living that. You're living the feeling of it actually does work, which is so awesome.
Yeah, I don't mind admitting that feeling when I heard those Let's Go Rocker chants in the venue, in another team's venue, was, I mean, that's truly one of the coolest feelings I've had in my entire career. And, you know, something that, you know, if somebody had told me a year ago, and it's almost exactly a year ago that the Wilf family approached me about taking on this role, if somebody told me that 10 months later that would be happening, I never would have. It's pretty amazing. But, you know, to your point there, you know, we've talked about this concept with this team of, you know, of being, if we do things the right way, can we be the team that is some people's second favorite team, right? Obviously, we'd love for everybody to have Rocker as their favorite team, right? And certainly people in Minnesota. But especially early on, we talked about a concept of, look, if there are people in Minnesota or wherever that were FaZe fans, are FaZe fans, you know, we're Envy fans, we're not going to ask them to give up their old loyalties. That would be a, you know, that would not be the right approach. And Frank, I don't even know how you actually ask them to do that.
Send out a little letter.
But hey, we're cool with being somebody's second favorite team too, right? And if you're a FaZe fan, but we're the team that you root for when Atlanta isn't playing, like we'll take that support. That's cool.
Yeah, I love that. So switching gears here a little bit, I kind of wanted to pick your brain on some of the more specific stuff, because not only are we heading into a new format, But we had this massive free agency before the year, which I don't think a free agency or roster mania period has ever been so crazy before a season. Yeah. Never that much movement. Going into it now, I mean, there's like, I would say 4, maybe 5, depending on the weekend, 4 or 5 teams that could take a home series at any given weekend. And that obviously that's a good thing, I think. I think it's a good thing that it's gotten more competitive, because for a few years there, it was like one or two teams were like, they were always in the finals together, and then like, oh, Optic won. Sweet. I mean, it wasn't boring for me, but it was, it was pretty awesome. But like, you know what I mean? Like, now it's so competitive. So what do you make? I mean, did you expect Florida to come out and win?
Oh, no. No, they did, absolutely not. I've apologized to Ogre 2 like 5, 6 times now, because I'll never forget, we were in Atlanta and his team had just beaten Chicago, and he walked past me in the corridor and he said, ah, you believe me now, Ben? And I was like, no, I don't. I said that. I'm like, no, I don't. Like, I don't believe that you can keep this up. A couple of weeks later, beat him again. I'm like, damn, like maybe Florida is the real deal. And then they go out and they win a weekend. And I'm just sat there. I'm like, I had a big four, right? And to me, a big four, that's like a lot. That seems like you're Mr. On the Fence, like you can't really decide who's the best. And then I'm like, is there a big five now? Like, what's going on here? It's almost broken down to a point where, and I figured you were going to ask me this, so I tried to like preempt this answer, and I still don't really know the best way of explaining it, but there used to be triangles, right? Where if you think of a top three, it's like, well, this team can beat this team, but then they can beat this team and they beat them. Now that's like expanded out into like five. It's like a pentagram. It's nuts, man. It's like every team can beat certain teams, but that might not mean that they can beat other teams, which means it's very much on the day, and it's very much who's on your side of the bracket, which could actually determine how much success you're going to have, right? So like, for example, Rocker versus Atlanta FaZe. You guys can beat them. There's teams out there that can't beat Atlanta FaZe, which basically just means, all right, well, which side of the bracket could they be on compared to you? If they have, for example, Florida Mutineers, well, can Florida beat FaZe? I don't know. Maybe Florida could be the best team in the game. At this point, I have no clue what's going on at the top of the standings. But there's five teams that, to me, to your point, can win any weekend. They just need a little bit of luck on their side and a bit of bracket luck. And to me, that's crazy, because we've never had that. Never. The most we've ever had is maybe three. But for the most part, I can think back maybe a grand total of maybe 4 or 5 years where I knew who was going to win every single event.
Pretty much.
Didn't even have to think about it. It was like, yeah, they're going to win. Every bracket show, it turned into, all right, rather than me tell you who's going to win, because I know who's going to win, let me tell you who could win, right? we almost changed what a bracket show meant, where it was like, this could happen. This is the underdog story, and we would tell that story as opposed to Complexity's gonna win, Optic's gonna win. Like, it didn't matter. It's so I guess not uncompetitive, but it was just so obvious, because just some teams were better than others. Whereas now, because it's a franchise league, I feel like maybe it's kicked the players up the butt a little bit in that sense. Where it's like, all right, it just got serious, you know what I mean? And everyone is digging deep, and everyone is trying to win weekends. And I mean, five teams. That's nuts to me. That's truly incredible. So for a commentator standpoint, great. Because you never know who's going to win. You go into every series knowing it could be an epic game 5, round 11, which is like a commentator's dream. It's just truly amazing. Like, I'll look at my schedule each weekend. Like, all right, who am I casting? I'm like, all right, potential game five, every single one of them. And that's just absolutely fantastic. And again, for the neutral fans out there, you couldn't ask for better, like, a display of Call of Duty esports.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking with my counterpart from Atlanta FaZe after we beat them in LA.
Such a good game, by the way. That was
I mean, that was just
the whole series.
I was running around unreal. A bar, high-fiving everyone.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, he made a point that I thought was really valid, where, you know, he basically said, like, yeah, I'm not glad you guys beat us, but sort of alluded to this idea that it's good for the league to have that level of competition. And just like you're saying, it's more compelling. So you have, you know, I mean, you're talking about five, but you know, there could be even more teams that could run the table and win a tournament any given weekend. And that's just so much more compelling from a content standpoint, from a broadcast standpoint, in terms of drawing in new fans, than if it was just Atlanta and Chicago head and shoulders above everybody, or Atlanta, Chicago, and Dallas as the big three. So it's, you know, I think it'll be, you know, it's just every step along the way, and the way it's setting up too. Like, let's say that you know, that the top five sort of stays as that. Being in that top four at the end of the season in terms of points makes such a difference for the way the championships and the way playoffs will be structured. So, I mean, every single game will matter. If you're, you know, if we or whoever is in a dogfight to be in that top four, it'll be really interesting down the stretch.
It's win as many games as you can every single weekend, and pray to God you win some championships along the way. That's basically how I look at it, because, I mean, how long's left? Like, it feels like we're basically like approaching halfway through.
Yeah, we got to be at the halfway point by now.
I think we're close. So it's basically becoming crunch time. You guys are super blessed because your first time in. Actually, I don't think you really ever. Well, I guess there was maybe a couple of down years for Optic where there were kind of a quote bottom team. But
yeah,
imagine you're in kind of like the bottom two. Like, that to me is like petrifying. Like, if I was managing a team and they were down there, because what do you do? Like,
there's,
right?
Yeah,
you're desperate for points.
That kind of brings me to the next thing I wanted to talk about is like this roster movement. It's really interesting to see how it's working out, because instead of New York saying, okay, Sensor, here you go, unleash the door and let them run out and go at it, they pick up this amateur guy, and I mean, it seems like New York has improved off of just that one change. So
yeah, they have.
And now, like, you're definitely right that it's crunch time. If you're like in the bottom six of the league right now, and you know that, yes, okay, because of the online format, you know, champs is going to be a thing, and you're going to be there. But if you don't have those high points, if you're not seeded high, you might be starting out the loser's bracket. So at this point, you're sitting to yourself, looking at your roster, saying, okay, what's the issue here? Is it the coaching? Is it the management? Is it the players? What's going on? Is this, like you said, a kick in the butt for some of the players who maybe didn't take competing as seriously as they could have coming into this year? What do they do? I mean,
I honestly think you take the New York approach. I really do. There's a lot of players who we know, who've been competing in Call of Duty for a very long time. Are they still talented? Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, they'll maybe find their way into a team if you poke maybe expansion in a couple of years' time or whenever that occurs, right? I always make the joke, you expand four teams into this league, well, that's 20 players.
Yeah.
Name me the next 20 players. Like, who are they? Like, I can maybe name you, like, four,
they're in
five,
the Challenger 20s, series somewhere.
20s is a lot, right? So there's going to be those old players that come back and get spots just because they've competed at a high level before, they have the experience. So they'll slot in somewhere in the future if the league expands. I don't know if it will, but I will assume it will. But for the New York approach, it's really interesting, right? Because you go, all right, well, we had one of the best players in Europe ever. Well, it didn't work out, so we'll put him to one side. You still have Sensor on the bench. Great player. Champion. He knows how to win. But rather than taking your chance on Sensor, you go with someone completely new. Someone who's just been making big noise in the community, in the amateur scene, and is just talented, right? And you think back at the success E-United had to end the CWL era.
Yep.
Simp, Abizi. You put him with a veteran of Clay, and boom, the rest is history. That's how I always look at that team. And for Simp, what he achieved in his rookie year, like, he turned 18, I think it was the second place, and then MVP, MVP, first, the two biggest events of the year.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And
right?
Off
so,
of champs, like, imagine your rookie year being that.
Like,
there's never been
what?
That successful of
no.
a rookie year.
Never.
Not
and
Kenny, not probably Dashy.
Probably never will be.
Yeah.
Probably never ever will be again, because just of how things kind of panned out for him and that team at the time. But there's so many players in the amateur scene that are competing who are just hungry, because they haven't had their slice of cake, right? They haven't mm-hmm. had that chance of, you know, what is it like at the top? Whereas a lot of these players have had this for, you know, 10 years, if you will. Admittedly, it's changed a little bit along the way, but they've been in the spotlight. So now if you're an amateur player, like, I've been saying a lot, like, I did a Challenger stream the other day. This is the best time in Call of Duty history to be an amateur player.
Yes.
Period. Because every top team will have people looking at the results every single week. Mm-hmm. They'll be tuning into streams. They'll be checking out, is this guy good? They'll get the coaching staff. Is this guy good? Could he slot in? Maybe is there a potential sub do we bring him on? And then an amateur player went from, you know, playing in challenger series every day to potentially a small salary, which is better than he's ever had so far, right? And then that's how you grow. Like, what if you go, I laugh, but the Toronto Ultra kind of approach, right? Where you have an A team and a B team. Problem is they never really figured out what their A team and B team was. They just had too many players, but hopefully
there's a lot going on there.
Hopefully for their sake, they figure that out soon.
Yeah.
But you could potentially have the E-United approach, they did it better, was the A team and then the youth team, right? They bring in these players and they practice. And then what happens? Bang, Simp appears, he slots in, they start winning championships. My point is, there's so many good players out there in the amateur community now, in the amateur scene, where if I'm a team owner, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at that and I'm saying, how can we bring these guys in for maybe not this season? Hell, maybe not even next season. But they could be a massive, massive asset, which we should hold on to and we should try and help grow. Whether it's grow content, whether it's grow just gameplay, it doesn't matter. Like, things are formalizing now to a way that Call of Duty's never seen before. And I think it's the people that are so forward thinking that can take advantage of that, that will have the best success in years to come. Not just this year, maybe not just next year, but the actual future. It's about growing in a way which is smart. And these young players, man, you saw what Mac did for New York. It was insane. He was so good. Actually, you said he made that team better, which for an amateur player to come in first series, and you look at the teams they had to play, not easy.
Yeah.
Like, he really performed at a high level. And I can promise you this, there were more players like him ready and waiting for their chance.
I agree. I think, you look at like the traditional sports approach. I think that's where some things from traditional sports can be learned from. I mean, you have like the major league and the minor league, or you know, like the secondary kind of sister team that's hanging out there, and they're kind of utilizing that to farm these players upwards. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, obviously, but you know, I think that's going to be a huge part of the future of Call of Duty esports. It's not going to, yes, if you're an amateur player and you're thinking, how do I get on a spot? How do I get on Minnesota Rocker? Like, you have to play. You have to go to these tournaments. Yeah. You have to play in anything official that you can. And the better you do at those things, the more you get your name out there, the more you're going to be recognized. And then maybe if you're thinking more than just, you know, 1 month ahead of time, which, no offense, I know a lot of Call of Duty players do. Yeah. I used to do the same. But if you're thinking years down the line, yes, getting a spot on one of those, I guess, whatever you'd call academy teams, that is, you know, the goal. Or, you know, you get an opportunity, which is, I think, rare, but you get an opportunity like Mac and you just take it. Or even like LA Gorillas right now, like, they didn't know seemingly what to do at all. So they were like, hey, let's just try this. But it worked for them. They've improved. I don't know if they've improved to the point that they wanted to, but they've improved, right? And so it's been really interesting to see how teams are kind of handling it. And especially in this first season, it seems like it's tough to make a ton of roster changes mid-season like this based on how it's all set up right now.
It's so strange. I actually had this conversation. I forget who it was, but it was like maybe 4 or 5 days ago. There hasn't been that much movement, mm-hmm. right? Which maybe a credit to the structure of the whole league and the way that things set up, where you can have your starting five and you can have, you know, a couple more players, the coaching staff now, there's just a lot more formality to it. But like, you go back, even like last year, there was a lot of movement in the middle of the season, right? There's teams scratching their head. This isn't working. What do we do? All right, Clay, here's a ton of money. Will you come play for me? You will. All right. Slasher, here's a ton of money. Will you come play? You will. Great. You're now on my team. That's how it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now it's like, do we want to make a change? Like, even if you're at the bottom, you think, well, like, for example, let's say I'm the 13th team in the league, right? My team is just completely bummed out. We haven't won a single series, zero CDL points. I'm the GM. I'm sat there. All right, well, what do? I approach you guys. Hey, can you give me God RX? You go, well, for who? That'd be the first question, right? For who, and then for how much money, right? Like, it's not simple anymore.
The answer is no.
Whereas now, yeah, exactly, right? For you to give up that asset is just never going to happen. Like, it's just not. Whereas in the past, you probably would have done.
Yeah.
Like, well, just because it's like, oh, well, here's a bit of money. Give me your player. I'll give you someone else. All right, sure. Now you're playing in a franchise league. You're like, well, this guy is like, he's a massive asset to us. I could have picked any of your players. It was the first one that came to mind.
Of course, all of them.
It's just not easy anymore. And that means the decisions you have to make are so important, which is why I say invest in the future now. Make those power plays now where you can see the young talent. Admittedly, Call of Duty is weird because it changes every year, but talent is talent, I like to think. You invest in those young players now, and then in the future, if something isn't working, you have that backup. You have that contingency plan of, all right, well, let's just give this guy a shot, see what happens. And then maybe you have the New York effect where you improve.
Yeah, I agree. I think as far as like the roster stuff kind of goes, I definitely agree. I think now it's to my point of we're not just looking, you know, 1 month ahead of time. Or it used to be, remember all the movement that would happen just before champs because they're trying to ramp into a champs
every
run?
Year.
Every year. That's like, I mean, Brett, think before about that.
Biggest tournament of the year. You're going to implode your team and change completely with no practice.
Brett, imagine changing quarterbacks in like week 14 before you know you're going to make the playoffs.
It gives me anxiety just thinking about it. But it used to be every single... There was a point where it used to be before every single tournament. Like, those days used to exist. It's like, oh, we have a tournament next week. You want to come play? We'll get rid of this guy. You come? Yeah, great. Okay, cool. That used to be the mantra of Call of Duty Esports was WrestleMania before every event. And I remember we'd tee up all of our content getting ready around WrestleMania. That was the thing. Whereas now I feel like it just can't happen.
I think it's,
I really do.
It's a bit of the shift from the players running the show, which, you know, is, you know, that was, remember Brett, when I walked into the office for a little brief of, you know, the who's who and who I think we should go for. I was like, this is how it usually goes. And for the record, I don't think it's always going to be like that. I think now that it's formatted, you are going to have like team management. You're going to have coaches. You're going to have more than just the captain of the team saying, ah, he's played bad twice in a row, get him out of here. Like, it's a much more structured conversation now.
That's the point. I feel like it can't happen anymore, right? And I think that structure is already seeping in. You'll have players who I've spoke to, I'm not going to name names, but who say, I'm unhappy, like I don't want to play with this team. I'm like, well, make a team change. Can't. Like, that's the response. Can't. You have to deal with the situation that to be fair, a lot of the players have made their own bed, if you will. Like at the start of the season, I know a lot of players kind of banded together and said, this is the team we want to play with. We'll play for your brand. It wasn't, let me pick up this player, this player, this player. A lot of teams, whether it was either twos or threes or fours, fives, for example, a lot of teams and players were kind of pre-molded before anything happened. So it is the case of, well, you made your bed. Now it's time for you to sleep in it. Like, you should have thought about this. And obviously it's hard again because Call of Duty changes every single year, but that's why I'll keep saying it, man. You've got a contingency plan. You have to look at some of the younger players. And again, I know there's so much talent out there. There really, really is.
It's interesting to think about from the, call it organizational or management perspective. So we're fortunate that we've had success, and so we haven't had to consider roster changes or anything like that. But the fact that players have guaranteed contracts impacts this, right? If you're an organization,
completely, yeah.
You know, you can't just cut a player. I mean, in theory, you can, but you're going to be paying his salary. So you have to be a lot more, I don't want to say careful, but there's certainly more financial considerations that go into making any sort of a roster change than there. And I don't know exactly how contracts were structured in the previous previous league, but from what I understand,
there weren't any.
It was the Wild West.
No obligation. It's a lot easier. I mean, it's interesting because obviously, like, that was a key move that the league made to provide financial security for players, and I think it's a great, I think it's a great move from that standpoint. But it is funny because I imagine there are players in the league that are saying that want to see their teams make roster moves, and their team really can't because of that dynamic. But it'll just be interesting to see how these things evolve over time, right? I think over time, it's the first season of the league. Everyone's sort of learning how this new world will work.
Agreed.
But over time, people will sort of figure out, like, where are the efficiencies or inefficiencies in the system, and how do you figure that out? But, I mean, to your point, Benson, on, players grouping up and playing with their friends, et cetera. I mean, we certainly saw that during free agency.
Boy, were we pitched,
I don't mind admitting, going into it, I was trying to learn as much as I could, right? But these were all names on a piece of paper that, Ashley was sort of sizing up, okay, these guys used to team with, this guy teamed with this guy, and these guys are probably a duo, and we're going to go talk to them, et cetera. And we certainly saw that, obviously, Cillian Assault were a package deal. We saw, them and GotRx, it kind of formed up as a trio right around the time that we signed them. But what we saw, sorry, I'm just muting something that's coming in. what I think has been an ingredient of a success for us is the fact that, you know, we look at how that roster was rounded out, right? We signed Silly Assault and Gutter X on the same day. And then
what a beautiful day. I'm sorry.
Yep. Great day. Oh man, we've got so many funny stories that day.
That was a weird day. Like I said, pitches. It was insane. We were 15 minutes away from like just insanity, man. Just insane like pitches, and like if Cillian Assaults and Jerome, or I say Jerome because there's two Adams, but Goddard X, like they had the same agent, and he was like, hey, just want to let you guys know they're going to sign somewhere else if you don't, you know, pick it up. And I'm like, let me talk to him. Like, there was so much going on and so much to take care of. And so, I mean, we knew though.
All that stuff is why that WrestleMania was great. There's so much fans don't realize about behind the scenes. Like, people who kind of understand that will say that was the craziest WrestleMania call that he's ever had. Because it was genuinely how I imagine transfers in real life. When you get to like deadline day and, you know, it's the final hour, it's like, well, my player hasn't signed here, he's going to go over there. Like, you have the agents on the phone. Like, it was like that. Like, it was truly like that. That was what teams and players experienced, was just absolutely bananas at the end of like deadline day. It was crazy, craziness.
Oh yeah. There was a point where, you know, Ashley was mostly talking to the players and I was mostly talking to the agents. That was sort of how our, you know, what our cadence was. But at one point, you know, Ashley was messaging the guys and I was talking to the agent. It was like, all right, you know, don't sign anywhere else until, you know, 2 p.m. Like, let's talk at 2 p.m.
Give us 2 hours.
Yeah. And then, you know, we thought we were pretty close and we jumped on the phone with Justin and his dad, Mike.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
You know, and had a great conversation, you know, and I think very rightfully so. You know, both Justin, who's one of the longest tenured players in the scene, has a great head on his shoulders. But both Justin and his father wanted to kind of know, like, what is this organization about? You guys are the new, you know, you're the new group in town, you know, and had a very good conversation with them. And fortunately signed all three of those guys on the same day. And it was hilarious. Like, we've got so many funny stories from that day. We were touring a community college that our ownership group owns that was just sitting there empty. We needed a temporary facility for a couple months while our new place was getting built. And so Ashley and I had toured this place, and then suddenly like the phone starts blowing up. So we literally just basically set up camp in this abandoned community college.
It was like Resident Evil vibes, because not all the lights would turn on.
It was creepy. At one point, like everything was set. You know, Ashley had left, and I was just like dotting some I's and crossing some T's on the paperwork. And when I walked down the hall, and there's just this long hallway, and it faces east west, so the sun is setting on one end, and there's no. It was like, it really felt like it was a Resident Evil game.
Did you take it as a bad omen?
I was like, all right, I'm getting them out of here because.
Yeah, the sun was going down. I was like, I gotta go, Brad. I don't want to be in this creepy place with you anymore.
The story I was gonna tell before we sort of went down this rabbit hole. You know, so we signed the first three guys. And then, you know, when we signed Alex and Asim, neither of them were friends or had teamed with the first three guys. You know, I remember very vividly that Brian Saints, you know, he said, you know, Alex is a guy that we've got to go after.
Yes. Saint was like, Alex is that dude.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because of past friendships. I mean, it was just like he saw potential and what Alex could bring to the team as the fourth member of the team. And then when we talked to Alex, you know, months later and said, like, so really, like, no, why Minnesota? And he said, because I wanted to win. And I felt like this was the place where I could do it. And that was just so awesome to hear, both that he felt that way about the organization, but especially what it said about his mindset and where, right, you know, he wanted to do. And then getting a seam to round out the roster. And again, at the time, I didn't, I had watched a fair amount at that point, but I couldn't tell, okay, this guy is good for this reason or that reason. But I knew it was who the coaches and Ashley were talking about as the right guy to round out the roster. And yeah, I think Assault had a quote that we posted about how Asim is as important to what we're doing as a team as anybody else, because he does the dirty work.
The dirty work. Yeah.
Which I love, because when I played sports growing up, like I was never the most talented guy on the team. And so I've got a lot of respect for like anybody that is grinding and doing the dirty work, right?
Yep. Every team needs that guy, and so often is that guy undervalued or just underappreciated. So it's always good when your teammates kind of gas you up for making sure you're doing everything right and just kind of helping. But that's awesome to hear from Alex specifically. You know, I just wanted to win.
Yeah.
Too many teams and too many players, I feel, just say, whoever's going to give me the most money. And it's not always about that, right? Like for me, the first year of CDL, if I'm a player, I'm winning that. Don't care. I'm with the inaugural year of the Call of Duty League. I'm doing everything I can to win, because that will be remembered for a very, very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to hear that from Alex. But I feel like you guys did a really good job of a balanced team in the sense of not just in the game, but also out the game. Like I feel like they've developed that family kind of aura a little bit. Like they seem really good friends. There is no like cliques. Like often Call of Duty esports was kind of compared to like high school. It's right. Like there's a click over there, there's a click over there. If they don't like each other, they'll speak to like X, Y, and Z. Whereas I feel like your team has become a family over time, which is great, especially considering some of them hadn't even teamed with each other in the past.
Yeah, that was a big part of it. I mean, it was kind of funny. Like, I got our eggs. It's so funny. I have this notebook of all the notes I was taking on my player calls during that era. And so for Adam, a.k.a. Got Our Eggs, he was one of the first people I talked to, as well as Silly and Assault, just because I wanted to be like, okay, I know these dudes. Like, they're going to want to duo up. We're going back to Boots. They won a world championship on Boots. Like, I know Assault is a nasty main AR. I think it's important to build around the main AR player, I think. And then, you know, Silly can literally do it all. He's so insane. So and they were immediately interested. Like, just, it wasn't even just like, okay, what'd you place last year? What's your KD? It was, what do you want? Like, what are you here for? You're here to win, but what do you want out of your franchise that you're going to be representing too? And so understanding that and understanding like what they wanted from us was really helpful too. And then, you know, like I said, I talked to God or X, and I knew, I was like, he, like, bare minimum, he's like on this team, I hope. Like, I'm hoping it works out that way. You never want to hope too much in roster mania, because you know how that goes. But I'm like, I see something there. I see that he's, because he's been around a while. It's not like he's new, but this attention that he's getting is new. And so I could tell that, like, if he keeps going however he's going and hits his stride, I think he's doing this year, it's awesome to see. And then just the type of guy that he is too, like, in talking to him, he's real kind of country boy, chill guy, like drives a truck and like whatever. I don't even know if Jerome drives a truck, but
does in your head.
He does in my head, and I know he wants one, so maybe he will. Maybe I'll see him pull up to the facility in a truck one day, which would be like life goals. But they're all really good guys, and I could tell, like, I was part of Optic for a long time. I know those strong personalities that can come in on a team, and sometimes it's very good to have those guys on your team, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's too much clashing going on. And so I love that all of our guys are laid back and about the win and about working together to get there. And that's been one of the most important things to me for this roster, is just they're no BS. They want to work together, and they do.
It's a special thing. That's a very, very special thing, to have players who have the same vision as the actual franchise team itself. Sometimes there's that kind of segregation, right? Like, what the players want isn't exactly the same path that the team wants, and same vice versa. Whereas to have everyone aligned in that one goal is, it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, good things seem to happen.
Yeah, and I'd be completely remiss if I didn't give a huge shout out to our coaching staff in Brian Saint and Jake, aka Reppin. They are an incredible duo, and they have really helped our players work together well and step up to the next level. They play the game the right way, and I can't take any credit for how the team has performed. I just put them together, and the rest that they did was due to the players and due to the amazing coaching.
That's awesome.
Yeah, one of the things that's been really amazing to see from my point of view is the things that the coaches talked about at the start of the year, and Ashley as well, in terms of believing that we had the right group of guys, and seeing what we saw in the coaches, to, you know, to improve and have the right recipe for success in a situation where, obviously not right now, but we had the players coming to the facility on a daily basis. You know, the coaches, I don't know what other coaching staffs in the league do or don't do right, but I know what our guys do. And they put in so much time and effort into having the right, you know, putting the players in the right position to succeed. And just the dedication that they all have to doing it the right way is something that's, you know, is something that we saw from those guys from day one. But thinking back to what Brian and Jake and Ashley talked about with these players was they felt like this was the right group to spend the time and dedication to learning the game and really working their butts off to get to a good place with it. And, you know, I mean, so far it's played out that way. It's a long season though.
That's true.
Halfway there.
Yeah, really. I mean, for some reason, I'm just like in this whole weird just pandemic time, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, champs. We're trying to get there. We're trying to get those points. We're trying to get that good seed. We're trying to ride into the weekend and then hopefully win it right off into the sunset. I feel like, you know, I gotta ask.
So, you know, Ashley talked about, you know, God RX and mm-hmm. his I would say ascension in terms of awareness of his skill as a player. I gotta give Ashley a little bit more credit than that, because when I remember the first meeting that her and I had where we were looking at her list of players, we said to her, Ashley, who's a player that's undervalued that you think has the potential to really rise? And Goddard X was the first name that she said. Absolutely. I'd love your perspective on him as a player and, you know, where yep.
We'd
love your take on him as a player and where he's gone.
Honestly, he's been talented, like probably as maybe not as good as he is right now, but he's been really, really good for probably the last like 3 years. But he's always been the player who would have the occasional great game, mm-hmm. and then the community would kind of forget about, and then it would be the next event, and then there would be that great game again, and you're like, ah, God RX, I remember he did that thing like a month ago, and then the community would forget about next event. That's the same thing, and he would consistently make big plays, like big-time players, right? They make big-time plays, and he is that type of player. But for some reason, and I honestly, whether it was just the team he was on, couldn't tell you exactly why he didn't get the credit and recognition he deserved. I think that's what's so good about this year is a lot of players, a lot of coaches, a lot of commentators, and just anyone who has been around this thing for a while will tell you he's finally getting the credit he deserves. It's not he's all of a sudden become, you know, God's gift to the game. He's always been great. Now he's just really been put in a position where he can shine, and everyone is like, all right, I see what he's doing now. And that's such a good feeling for me. I can't imagine how good that feels for him. And what's really, really good is from just the interactions I've had with him, it doesn't seem like that's got to his head. Like sometimes, you know, you can grow a massive ego off something like that. But for his perspective, again, I feel like it's just, I'm doing what I did for the past like couple of years. I haven't changed, right?
Being
I'm still playing
time.
The same way I play. It's just, you know, we're having more success now, which is great. So I feel like for him, you just put him around the right pieces, like the puzzle, which again, just give him a light to really shine on. But he's been so talented for quite a long time. And to be fair, you can look at a couple of your players like that, like Silly, for example. Silly's always an interesting one because I feel like people think Silly only started playing a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, Silly is one of the most longstanding players in the entire league, playing. And then you look at like his accomplishments, what he's been able to win. I mean, he's a fantastic asset. And again, he's another one of those like dirty work type of players who on so many different teams, he would be such a vital component. I mean, vital, like you took him out of the equation, that team isn't winning. But people just kind of say, oh, well, yeah, it's just Silly, right? So putting all those pieces of the puzzle together can so often give you such a good feeling, I guess, and great results too, right? I mean, you look at where you guys are in the standing right now, and this is where you're perceived as well. Public perception is often important, a top four team. I think that's fantastic. Honestly, I think the next step for Rocker is going out and stringing together a series of event wins. And when you get closer towards the end of the year and closer towards champs, that's when you can sit there and, oh, if you think you feel stressed now watching your team play, just wait. Just wait till champs comes, because that's going to be a whole different level of stress you have never even thought you could feel.
Seriously.
Oh, man, I shaved my head, but, you know. At the rate we're going, it might just not bother to grow back.
I mean,
advanced in tournaments. It's been a lot of five games against, six games against Seattle, five games against Paris a couple times. I mean, it's no joke.
The one thing about champs is, and this has been true every single champs, it never goes as most people expect. Maybe last year could be the exception where United won playoffs and they came out and they won.
Yep.
Maybe that's the one exception. But even then, a lot of people kind of doubted them, said they're not going to be able to do it. Champs is it's special because it feels like anything can happen. Like anything can happen. Like you go back to when EG won, when champs at World War II, they were a map away from not even getting to the bracket. They had to 3-0 up the gaming, which, sorry, Ashley, was like, it should not have happened.
Yeah.
Never should have happened, but it did. And it's just, it's so special because these things happen so frequently. Every single time we get to champs, there's something special that happens. And whether it's, you know, you go in as an underdog, whether it's you go in as a favorite, like, I don't know what I would rather want to go into champs time as, probably just kind of like the middle of the road in terms of perception. But to your guys' point, obviously seeding is so important. You need as many CDL points as you can get. That's for sure. But I can tell you, if you're stressed now, I promise you this. Come championship weekend, if you get to championship Sunday, you might not even watch. You might be too stressed.
I don't even. That's what I'm like. I don't know what the situation is going to be. If it's going to be a LAN, if it's going to be an online thing, an online watch. If I'm going to be at a watch party, I don't want anyone to make eye contact with me. Don't look at me. I need to, like, I'm going to be so honed in. It's going to be nuts, dude. I'm just hoping to me, champs is kind of like those teams that do, like, decent during the season can sometimes have a really impactful champs. Obviously, I want us to win way before then. And I think we could have. I think there's, two tournaments now at least that we could have taken if a couple things went a different way. And so we'll freaking see, man. So we're at time, but I wanted to pick your brain about one more thing. And this is legendary to me, so I hope it gets across either to if you guys watched this show back in the day or if you're just interested in this type of content. During the MLG days, you did a show called The Esports Report.
Did.
And it was one of my favorite things on the internet. Talk a little bit about, like, what was it like? Because you were kind of like the sports center of esports. You were in that vein. You were in that vibe.
Yep.
What was it like going into the studio every day and doing that? And in my opinion, man. I would want to know your opinion, but my opinion, you guys were ahead of your time. You were before your time.
So looking back, the esports report, I still get tweets about it almost every single day.
That's right? Awesome.
Because to a lot of people, it was like the thing. You would finish school or you'd be on the bus home or whatever. You finish work and you tune into the ESR. I will give full credit to Puckett for all of that stuff because that was very much like his vision at the time.
Yeah.
And
shout out
for
Puckett,
me to come in, that was like the first year that I came into MLG too. So I remember like...
Yeah, you were new. Just moved here.
Yeah. I literally, day one, I remember I walked in and there was Chris. And he was like, all right, so this is the show. He'd been doing a take of that show for quite some time, but he was like, all right, this is how we're going to do it. I still have the picture. I'm actually going to get it framed of the very first show where I sat next to Chris and gave him a high five. It's like this legendary picture to me because it means so much. Like,
that's the
and from that moment, he was like this mentor to me in terms of, all right, he taught me so much about not even just being on camera, but like things that go behind the scenes, production, just like certain things to me that would, annoy me. He'd be like, don't get annoyed by that. It's an easy fix. You just do this. And he would like basically calm me down to that sense. And then we brought in Jack, who, I mean,
yes.
Jack now Courage, just a little global superstar. Credit to his boom. He's been
shout
incredible.
Out Jack.
Mr. X, who now obviously Overwatch caster.
Yep.
Like we had this incredible crew, and every single day when ESR was fully in the swing of things, I remember we would go into the studio and it was like, all right, I want to be on camera today for probably 4 to 5 hours, a couple of breaks every 30 minutes or so, but we're just going to talk. And we're going to talk about Call of Duty. We're going to talk about crazy clips that have happened in other esports. And that like 5 hour period just used to fly by. Like the production team were such a privilege to work with. Like some of the guys now have gone on to produce some incredible shows. Like that core team, the ESR crew it's just so funny for me to think back at because what everyone, and I mean everyone who worked on that show has achieved now is incredible. It really, really is. But again, you'd go in and we just talk about random stuff. And then you'd have the Rostamanias that come up and, for 5 hours, you're going to talk about, what happens if this player moves here? and you just hypothesize for 5 hours, and everybody loved it. So I guess it was kind of ahead of its time in a way. The problem is it was people have tried to replicate it. MLG tried to replicate it a couple of years after, and it never really took off the same. And the reason I will personally believe this is at that era where it was so successful, MLG hadn't fully been acquired yet. It was still MLG, where, like, in those days, I remember I could go to the office and I could ask Sundance. I'm like, hey, Sunny, I have an idea, right? What if I had a game show? And this is a true story. I did this, and we actually ran this as a show. I was like, Sunny, what if I had a game show? And he went, try it. That was the conversation. He went, try it. So I was like, oh, I was expecting this to go a little further back and forth. He was like, oh, go try it. So next day, Benson has a game show. I think it's still on YouTube somewhere. I would phone in guests on Skype, and it was kind of like a Deal or No Deal type thing, and you could win awesome prizes. It was really fun. But that was kind of the era that we were in, right, where everything was so simple. And then when you get acquired by a big company, things don't get as simple as that, right? You think about legal that comes in, and like we were talking about, like, copyrighted music, right? I'd never worried about copyrighted music before in my life. Now that's a very big issue that you have to think about. So a lot of the freedom of what made that show so special kind of went away. I know the league has talked about trying to do shows like that in the past. We thought about it with CWL. And the reality of the situation is I feel like it won't ever be replicated to that level where you could tune in and watch and it would just be fun, right? That isn't ever going to exist again because of just the freedom that we had back then. What could exist is a show that is more formalized, but then the problem is, would that show do as well? I don't necessarily think it would, because I think a lot of people tuned into the ESR because it was this fun, lively, like, you could watch and enjoy the content. It wasn't ever really being forced upon you. We just kind of, at the end of the day, you were watching three or four of your favorite personalities just have fun. And that's, like, so rare now. Like, it doesn't really happen that much. But I would love to see a specific COD League version or spin of that, because we as a league have been producing a lot of content. Like, we have our own podcast. Mm-hmm. We have Teep's new show.
Yeah, ton of cool stuff. The content slate is actually sick that the league's
It's really, out. Really good. I messaged Teep. I was like, yeah, it's a really good show. You're onto something here. But the way I explain it is, again, you look at traditional sports, right? You can tune into ESPN when sports are going on, and you'll see the ticker at the bottom, the results. You're always up to date. Whereas in our league, are you always up to date? If you didn't watch last week, how do you know what the result of last week was? Do you know the standings every week? Are you up to date with roster moves that come in? Really, the only way you find that information out right now is Twitter, right? And if you're not on Twitter and you happen to miss it, that information is gone. It's dusted. You only find out when you're watching the stream and you go, wait, what happened to this player? Why is he not on that team anymore? You don't have access to that kind of information anymore, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
But again, my big fear is, how well would that show do now? Right. And I just, there's something inside of me which doesn't feel like it would do well, but I still feel it's essential. Right. It's like, even if it turns into a report show where it's a 1 minute, you know, clip that lives on YouTube, that's maybe you put all these clips together and it's streamed into a 15 minute, 30 minute episode every single week. All those clips go out to social, spread across the week. At that point, it's very hard to miss that information because it's just so out there. But I definitely think it's something that the league should consider. Fingers crossed, maybe it's something that happens in the future. But damn, there's all, I remember when you came on the ESR, that was such a
dude, that was one of my favorite days.
So fun. That was so fun.
I was in New York City, if you could believe it. I'm a suburb girl. I was down there. I was at the ESR. I was so out of my element. I was so in my new world. Obviously, I knew you, I knew Chris Puckett, so I was like, yeah, I'm comfortable here with these guys. And I'm on this, like, little desk stage thing. And I'm like, it was my first experience with hearing a voice in my headset that was like a producer. And I'm like, dude, doesn't he?
Like a
he...
deer in headlights.
Yeah,
like...
I was like, doesn't he know I'm trying to talk? And he's like, commercial break, 30 seconds. And I'm like, what do I do? I'm like, so
That's so funny, because a lot of fans don't realize that happens, right? Yeah. Like when you're on air and you're on a show, like, you always have a voice always telling you, like, guiding you where you need to go. Dude. Right. Essentially, you always have your producers letting you know. So there's times where I can definitely hold my hands up. I've definitely done this, where I'll be talking and I'm trying to listen, and then all of a sudden I miss what the producer says because I'm also trying to listen to, like, Chance, for example. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm trying to tell a story, but I'm trying to listen to Chance and I'm trying to listen to a producer. So it turns into this mesh of noise, and he'll be like, all right, throw to, like, for example, schedule card. Right. And I'm just talking to Chance. I'm like, Chance, I don't know where I'm supposed to go anymore. So we'll just end up spitballing for like 5 or 6 minutes and then eventually the schedule will come. But it's such a different feeling because a lot of people always say, yeah, I feel like I could do that. Like I could commentate. And it's like, trust me, that's the easy part. The hard part is all the other stuff like behind the scenes that goes on. Like commentary to me is the easiest job in the world. Like it's just having a conversation. Like it's just two people talking. But being able to talk whilst listening and watching and staying retentive to all this other thing.
And like being like, good on camera too. Cause I feel like sometimes I just go.
I don't mind admitting that when launch weekend, when I came on the desk for, you know, like a little 2 minute bit, which was nothing, like that was 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. I popped the thing out of my ear. And I'm like, this is not going to end well for me. I'm not used to it. It'll throw me way off. So I got to say, I sympathized with Krim a little bit when he had that moment. I won't say any more than that, but I was like, yeah, I've been there.
So true.
It gets
so
intense, true. Man. I think to your point, yes. As far as like back to like the esports report, the legendary esports report, I do agree. I think the appeal of the show was you were kind of like checking in with your pals or these personalities that everyone knows. And or everyone would get to know, and you're getting an understanding of what's going on, like, because like to your point, like unless you're on Twitter at the right time or looking it up yourself, like it's not, you're not getting that news. I mean, bless right. The people who came in this year and they're like, so what happened to Optic? Like they're like, what happened? And it's like there's right. Really, I mean, yeah, you could look up stuff about it, but there's no show that was like, by the way, this happened. Yep. So I'm interested to see, because I'm not sure if like the super traditional sports angle is the right direction. I don't think you can make it that formal and that formatted and make it super like buttoned up. But right. You can maybe, I'm thinking maybe like make a hybrid of it where it's familiar, it's a good personality, whoever ends up doing it, it's real and entertaining in some aspects. Maybe there's some different things they throw in there that are entertaining. But yeah, there needs to be a way for people to stay updated a little bit better.
I think the key thing for me is it just has to be fun. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is if it ever happened, whoever the host of that show would be, theoretically, would have to have fun. And you would want maybe two or three people to come on every week and just to laugh, like just to enjoy Call of Duty. Because so often, like I've been guilty of this in the past, 100%, is where you're so focused on stuff, you kind of lose that enjoyment and you lose the fun aspect. That work mm-hmm. kind of becomes work, which is very weird to say considering we work in video games, right? It's the best industry in the world to work in, but sometimes you forget the fun aspect of things. And to have people kind of remind you of that every single week on a show is fantastic. And for me, that fun aspect is everything, because not only is it the people doing the show, the producers doing the show, but as soon as they're having fun, instantly it comes off as contagious, right? So you watch and you go, ah, yeah, these guys are having fun. Now I'm having fun watching because everyone else is having fun. So for me, that's definitely the key component for success. If a report show of CDL News ever started to spin around, fun. There you
fun.
Go.
Have
just
fun.
Like that.
Well, I think it ties back to what we talked about earlier, the points you made on reaching those fans that play the game, right? Yeah. But haven't engaged it with the league itself.
Imagine this. You put that content in the game.
On the stadium.
Oh, there you go.
Every house you go into, Benson's reporting that Rocker 30-0'd Huntsman. And it was crazy. it could happen. I like that too. I think it'd be an awesome idea. All right, so I think this might be one of our longer episodes.
I warned you this was gonna happen,
dude. There's just so much to talk about every week. It's all this stuff. I mean, I'm so passionate about it. I mean, you know, me and Brett live it every day, right? Being in this stuff.
I have a question for both of you though.
Yeah, yo, okay. shoot.
So brackets, okay? Uh-huh. Predictions. For this weekend, obviously we have an event coming up. What day is it? Like Wednesday, two days, 3 days. I need to know predictions from you guys, because obviously I always get asked for predictions, so it's nice for me to be able to ask other people for your predictions for what you think is going to happen this weekend.
Well, it's so tough to say, because the four, I mean, all right, so for those of you guys that don't know, hopefully you know, if you're this far on the podcast, you should know at least what's happened, or maybe we need to come up with a show that tells you what happened. Maybe that's the point, but we placed in second at the last two home series that we played at, okay? One was on LAN. Strong, and then another one was online, and we lost to Florida Mutineers in the finals. Shouts out to them. It was our first time playing them. We do have this kind of vibe, minus Huntsman. We lost to FaZe, come back and beat them. Lost to Dallas, come back and beat them. Huntsman, we won't talk about that. I don't know what happened. But now we actually play Florida. They're in our group, or whatever it's called. Thing of teams, we play them first at 7:30 Central time. By the way, we're having on a digital watch party. Come into our Discord, link down below. Okay, but like, I'm excited to see, because I know the coaches and I know our players and I know Florida. They're good. They have great management as well. Shout out to Ogre, like over to you. Like, they're good and they're going to continue to be good. But how do we bounce back from the L? How do we take our loss and learn from it? I'm really excited to see that. So my prediction, I'm not going to go any farther than to say, Florida, we're coming back. We're going to 3-1 you, and we're moving on to win the thing. That's my prediction. I know that's super. I'm very biased, obviously.
I like that. You're allowed to be biased. You're allowed to be a little biased.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't imagine you figured that the way either of us would end the tournament is with Rocker not winning, right? That that side. I think it'll be really interesting, though. I mean, the rematch against the last team that beat us and, you know, beat us in the championship. And like Ashley said, you know, when we've gone back up against teams that have beat us, other than Chicago, we've managed to come out on top. Again, I think it's a credit to our coaches, right, and how they prepare and how they game plan for, you know, for a team that we've already seen. So obviously, I'm going to pick us to beat Florida.
What do you have a map count? I said 3-1.
Who do you meet in the final then? That's probably your better question. What is the team you expect play in the final? Because I think
FaZe
this week,
one, right?
Yes. So I think this weekend is me and Chance doing the finals. And I know you mentioned it before, but it's kind of funny. We've casted a ton of Rocker.
Yes. We love you guys.
It feels like we've become like the Rocker duo almost at that point. Like, we know like what to expect almost every single time. So for me, I predicted Rocker FaZe final, and we all know what happened last time. So that's kind of the final. That could be epic. That's who I predict. But do you guys kind of share that same sentiment?
Yeah,
maybe
I think it'll be FaZe. FaZe will learn from their most recent tournament as well, and they'll be back and pretty tough. I think they're gonna be pretty tough to play.
Okay. Yeah, you gotta think that FaZe comes through that group, because you don't have Dallas, you don't have Chicago in there. I don't have it in front of me, but yeah, I think that's why it's probably all the more important for us to find a way to go 2-0, so that you don't run into FaZe in the semifinals.
True.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about New York earlier. I mean, I know our coaches have commented, everybody's commenting on how much they've improved, but our coaches have specifically noted that, you know, that they're playing really well in scrim. So
yeah. And that, you know, they're in our like group, that, right?
Yeah, the group's tough. Yeah, I got it's Florida and New York, and you know, our northern rival, Toronto. Yep.
Yeah. I feel like that first game. I know that you're rival, but I'm still yet to be impressed from Toronto Ultra. I'm going to be honest. I'm just going to say, I think New York. That's the team you're most likely going to play second. If I was a betting man, that's where I'd put my money.
Yeah, New York's going to be tough too. And that's the thing, is playing Florida for the first time at the last grand finals we were in, that we don't seem to come out super hot against teams for the first time. And we haven't played New York yet, I don't think, unless I'm mistaken. So I'm going to be – and we definitely haven't played them, you know, at a tournament with Mac on the lineup. So – I'm pretty interested to see how that goes. I'm a little nervous, but also, you know, I'm ready to see how our boys do. I know that they're chomping at the bit, you know, even though it's, you know, from LAN to online, and it's not as, I wouldn't say it's as prestigious as when you win on LAN, but it's definitely like that motivation's still there, and I'm excited to see how we do this weekend.
What's weird is it's almost more important now.
Yes.
In a weird way, when you look big picture, mm-hmm. with how kind of the end of the year is structured, it's kind of more important than it was before in a weird kind of way. But hopefully for you guys, you get your first dub. Hopefully it's this weekend. I know you've been so close, so close. But hopefully it's this weekend for you guys. I think you guys deserve it. You definitely do.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say before we sign off here, I really appreciate, you know, all the, we've seen a lot of the praise that you and Chance and the other casters as well in the CDL have given us. And I think it's really appreciated. I think, you know, we internally were like, yeah, we should do this. That seems like the right way. And then, but to have that recognized, especially on stream and by you guys and by, like, frankly, like our peers or like my peer who's been in the same community the longest with me, like, to see that recognition means a lot because we really are trying to do all the cool stuff.
You're doing a good job, honestly. You guys are really, really doing a good job.
Thank you.
You should keep moving forward, keep doing new things, keep spinning off new things that may not work, but kind of like you said earlier on, you know, some things just aren't going to work. Ah,
yeah.
Do less of those and more of the things that do work, right?
At least we try.
I guess the key is just keep having fun. Like that's the one thing. You guys, every time I see you, you're always smiling. It always seems like you have that family vibe and just that enjoyment of what you're doing. Just never lose that, and I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. Likewise to you. Keep kicking butt. I know, like you obviously cast the CDL matches. You have your own Twitch stream. Shout out to the Red Pandas. So if you guys want to catch Benson, follow him. His links will be down in the description below. Also in the description down below is going to be a link to our Discord. You should definitely join it because they're active. There's an activity in there every day, but we're also doing an amazing digital watch party for the matches this weekend. You're going to want to be in there, put the stream up on your TV or whatever you got, and then pull up the Discord on your phone, your iPad, or your laptop, whatever your whole situation is. Flex a little bit with the devices. Come join us in the Discord. We'll be chatting, and we'll even have like a little bit of a show going on the side in our little Discord. So look forward to seeing you guys there. And then, yeah, if you're listening to the podcast, thank you. Appreciate it. We're available anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. That's iTunes, Spotify, all that. Look up Building Minnesota Rocker, or it's linked down below. Or if you're watching on YouTube, hello. Thank you so much for watching. I hope you enjoyed the three of us staring at each other and talking and making hopefully good points. And yeah, just appreciate you guys. Make sure to stay tuned for more content. Click subscribe, all that stuff. Follow Benson. He's a great person. And bye.